Welcome to the Round 7 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Fantastic. When we get through the score review, I think another good week for me, so I'm pretty happy. And, of course, we've got a special guest, Dunny, joining us for the first time since the season's kicked off. So I'm very, very interested to hear how your team's going, Dunny.
Thanks, mate. Happy to be here, but, yeah, I don't think you'd be that keen on hearing my team.
Well, it's always good to have you on nonetheless, eh? You're a great friend of the show, so thank you for joining us again this week. To our community out there, thank you, as we do each week, for your questions on Facebook and Twitter. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/supercoachcoach and at Twitter at supercoachcoach. We take a lot of your questions on social media to form our show each week, so don't forget, on a Tuesday, hit us up and we'll try and get your question answered. This week, the main topic for the discussion are the rookies. As was flagged last week by yourself, Mark, we're hitting upgrade season from this week onwards, and so there's definitely some ripe rookies ready to go, and there's also, thankfully, a few tempting rookie downgrades as well, so potential trade-in targets. In terms of the outs and ins, more generally, we'll probably look a little bit more to the backline this week. That seems to be where some of the attention is concentrated due to Wiedering and D being out, and most people starting deep rookie backlines and therefore needing to upgrade more so than downgrade there. So that'll be the focus for the show this week. Thank you again for joining us. We are an independent podcast, so head over to patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you have a dollar to spare and wouldn't mind helping out with some of the running costs of the show. So why don't we head into an update on how we've scored over the weekend now. Dunny, seeing as you haven't been on yet, why don't you kick us off for the week?
Okay, so I actually had a good week, so I was really glad to be on this week. So this week, and I at least I didn't come last, I don't think, out of the group, which is good. This week I scored 21.58. Unfortunately, though, my ranking is in the 12,000 range because I got off to a really poor start to the season. So my average score is sitting about 2,076. So not the best start of the season, but my last couple of weeks have actually been starting to get a bit of momentum up, which is good.
Did you say 21.58?
Yes, mate, I did.
I think you might have come last, mate.
No, it must have been a late adjustment.
I got 21.71 this week, so slightly ahead. Pretty happy to jump up just inside the top 7,000. It might not be that exciting, but at this point of the year, with a bit of a slow start, I'm pretty happy with that. It was a great week for the podcast backline this week, Marcus, with Heath Shaw, Bartel, and Daniel Rich all doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I brought in Luke Parker this week for Fife, and halfway through the second quarter, he was on 23, and I was just thinking that not a great week for me, and my luck was not running well, but then smashed out a 151 in the end and kicked the winning goal at the end of the games. Barlow did really well, so really awesome to have held him. My forward line was a bit quiet this week, and I got some room for improvement.
So, looks like the Supercoach juggernaut of the show is continuing to kick goals. I scored 22-14 and broke into the top 5,000. I'm so psyched after sitting at 30,000 only a few weeks ago. Yeah, another big week for the team. The boy you were giving me a bit of stick for when I first selected him is proven his worth. 124 from Dan Menzel over the weekend, which was really exciting. Toby Green's
every Geelong player scored over 100, didn't they?
Just about.
Tell yourself what you like, mate. I'm sure you're wishing you had Dan Menzel for 260k. And Toby Green, he scored 115 as well. He's pretty important to my side. And like you said, Mark, the podcast backline did well. So all smiles from this end. In terms of a group update, the highest scorer for our Supercoach Coach group scored 23.46, and that's James's Thunder Buddies. And that moved him up to a top 500 rank of 390th. So congratulations to you. That's an absolutely massive week. And in terms of who's leading our Supercoach Coach group, there's Tim with Here I Go Again, which we heard about last week. He's now sitting at 12th. And then there's Luke's Hacienda, who has moved up to 20th. So that's really fantastic. There's two of you sitting in the top 20. Good luck.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. In terms of our league update, which we haven't done for a little while now, the Supercoach Coach number one, so that's our ranked league, that's moved up to 8th. So very exciting to have representative in the top 10 leagues at the moment. And Supercoach Coach number 12, which is our 12th ranked league, they are defying all odds. They're coming 14th at the moment, so beating 10 of the other leagues ranked above them to start the season. And
that is. I think we got three in the top 20.
Mm-hmm. Supercoach, Coach, Queen. So that's our veterans group coming 19th there. So very, very happy with three in the top 20 at the moment and still early days. So hopefully we keep making some headway in the league stakes. So we should get on to the actual questions now. And in terms of structure, we'll move through it this way. So we'll hit up the injuries first, then look at the rookies, outs, then ins, and then premium and mid-pricer, outs and ins. So we'll start off with the injuries. And the first question this week is from Emily on Facebook, and she's asking about Gray. So she kept Gray last week, but is now thinking of trading him out. And he's possibly still out for three more weeks with that hamstring. And we know Gray has had a history of soft tissue injuries in the past, although he had got a little bit better over that in recent years. She's already traded out a lot of players due to injury, though, and is worried about using too many trades too early. So a big reason that I think it'd be tempting to trade out Gray is because he scored 53 in round 5. And so at 550,000, there is a fair bit of potential for his price to move downward once he comes back into the team. So if he's out for an extended period, he might be a potential trade-in option at under 500K if he turns his form around. Although I'm not sure if that's being too short-sighted as well.
Listed at the injury list as 1 to 2 weeks today, and you don't trade someone out if you're going to be picking them back up again for $50,000 less. Just not worth it.
I would have moved him on last week, but considering what you just mentioned, Mark, if he's listed as 1 to 2 and you've already held him for one, then I think I'd be tempted to hold as well. Emily's also has Laird, who was a replacement for JJ. So things are not going quite too well for her in the injury department. I hope you're still scoring well, Emily. For those owners who have Laird, Gans came back and his toe is actually broken and he'll be out for 2 to 3 weeks. This seems like an easy hold decision to me, though. He looks quite comfortably in the top 6 defenders.
Yeah, I think that we shouldn't be trading too many 2 to 3 week injuries out of our team. And I know a lot of people have already done it with Rock. Some have done it with Gray. They're just going to add up way too many if you just keep doing it for all of them. So you have to make a stand at some point, and Laird looks like a pretty reliable top 6 defender.
It is worthwhile noting that moving forward, once we hit this peak upgrade season, every injury trade that you make is a trade that is not used toward progressing your team forward. So especially during the upgrade period, I'd be much more hesitant to deal with injury trades, because by dealing with an injury trade, you're perhaps leaving cash on back and not fulfilling an upgrade and only managing one downgrade and one side swap that week. So especially during this upgrade sort of season, I would recommend holding these sorts of players. So we'll move on to the rookie discussion now, and we'll start off by talking about the outs. So the first question is from Rick Powell, and it's to trade or not to trade Jacob Wiedering. So it looks like he's out for 2 to 3 weeks with a bit of a shoulder injury. He's gone down 25K after a score of only 23 on the weekend, so that's a little bit unfortunate. Where do you boys sit on Wiedering? Would you be tempted to wait until he comes back?
Personally, I'd be moving on Wiedering at the moment. Break even 114. Is he really going to get 114? I mean, his top score, he did have 129, but he's also had some, you know, medium scores as well. So you're probably only going to keep him for another 1 to 2 weeks anyway. I'd move him on.
Yeah, I was hoping that he might turn out to be like my last upgrade. And if he hadn't got injured, I probably would have stuck to that. His scores have been 87, 68, 129, 73, and 61. So three scores below 75 indicate that he's probably not going to be a keep. You may as well just kind of get rid of him this week. It's an awkward spot, and I wish it hadn't happened, but it did, so.
I agree with both you boys. I'd be looking at trading him out, especially anybody holding a Laird type. Having two injured players on your bench for 2 to 3 weeks can be really stretching it. So anyone who has Laird, you'd almost certainly move Wiedering on. We'll talk about some other out potentials here, and you can rank them in relation to Wiedering. So I've split this up into sort of three categories. So you've got D and Waller, both from Essendon, both backline rookies who look to be just about ripe for the picking. D already dropped the 12K after disappointing 39 on the weekend. So 39 and 41 are his last two scores. His break even's 95, price at 296. He looks to have peaked. And Waller or Tipping Woody, he's at 309,000. His break even's 64, and his 106 has just cycled out of his price movements. Then there's Ben Kennedy, who arguably has a little bit more potential upside. His break even's 51, but he's not scored above 70 in the last month. And then there are a couple more players that potentially haven't reached the amount that you'd like to be able to trade a rookie out, but their scoring potential looks low enough that it's a worry whether or not they can move past their current price point. So that's Menadue at 220,000. He scored under 60 for the last month. And Ryan Davis, Smith from Gold Coast. He's priced at only 186,000. 37 and 33 are his last two scores. How would you guys rank D. Waller, Kennedy, Menadue, and Davis?
All right, that's a lot of players. D would have been good to get rid of last week. I think if him this week, then you probably have to hope he keeps his spot and gets back into form, and you keep him for the next 5 or 6 weeks and hope he can get his price back up. I think Tipper could probably do one more week at least, just because there's going to be other rookie pressures to get rid of. Benken, anybody that watches the live scoring would be aware that he just goes missing for like a quarter and a half, just really, really extended periods of time, which is really tricky to watch, but there's no urgency with him. Menadue the same. If he's named again this week, I'll be keeping him. I think Richmond will want to get games in him, and I'll just hope that he spikes a big score at some point. Davis is the concern because he's playing, but he's scoring 30s and his price is only 186,000. What can you really do with him? You're not really gaining anything from a trade. So my inclination is that Tipper and Day would be the ones that I'd be more inclined to trade, because it's a lot easier to go up from them, or you get a lot more money from going down. And Davis and Menadue, just hopefully they make some money at some point.
Dunny, how would you rate these five blokes?
I think I'm reasonably much in the same boat as Mark there. I think for me, D has got, with a break-even of 94, I think he's only had like one score above that. So for me, he goes first. I think Waller is probably the second one that I would move on. In looking at the other three guys, particularly Menadue and Kennedy, they've got pretty achievable break-evens still. So if you do still have them, I'd probably be keeping them for another week. And same with Davis. Whilst he's only scoring in the 30s, his break-even is still in the 30s. So there is a chance that he could rise up a little bit more. But yeah, DN, Tip and Woody would be the first two for me to go out of that group.
Pretty much agree with you, Blokes. I think I mentioned it before. 250K is kind of what you want to be looking at. So Menadue, Davis, not for me. I'd go Wietering first out, because it would take him potentially 5 weeks to get that 23-hour his cycle if he's out injured. Then D, then Waller, and then Kennedy, because he has a little bit more potential upside.
So just in regards to the Bombers rookies, mate, Essendon have Sydney and then North in the next 2 weeks. So it might be tricky to score in those games.
Looking at the ins now, which is perhaps a little bit more exciting to be discussing. The first question is from Nigel Thorne or Tabs here on Twitter. And this is the rookie on everyone's lips. Is Josh Smith a must-have? So I posted the break-even table on the website this week. And Josh Smith, negative 107 break-even after 72 and 96, seems to be the standout option. He's priced at only 102,000, which is also particularly tempting. So an extra 20K of potential value there compared to the standard priced rookies. Is he a must-have?
Mature aged, Collingwood have a history of playing players like him. I think you just have to lock him in with that break even.
And looking at his next two games, he's got Carlton and Brisbane in the next two. There's no reason not to pick him.
You just sold me even more, Dunny. I already had him locked, but that's a good next two opposition to be running up against, and he does very much look like the standout option. We have another question here from Thomas Goals about Mason Cox. So another Collingwood rookie on the bubble, 75 and 67, his two scores so far. He's a rock forward. We mentioned him in the preseason. We both ended up picking a player without much chance of getting a game, and now I'm kind of wishing we picked up Mason Cox instead for rock, and now getting some games and potentially will go up in cash. Thomas is asking, is he a must-have since he's a rock rookie, essentially? Thoughts on that?
Our good mate Moosey loves Cox. just wanted to say that. he is not someone that I'm really serious about, but I can understand why people would. I don't think he's a must-have, but I can understand why people would be bringing him in, and because he is that little bit older and his immediate draw coming up, he could end up making a bit of money. So I just worry about what his ceiling is, what his highest potential average is.
I think that's a fair call out, Mark. Even though athletically he's very gifted, he also doesn't have much time in the game. Although we've seen Blitzarves buck that trend in the past, Cox doesn't have that same running capacity.
Blitzarves played some junior footy. Like, he knew what a football was and he'd kicked it around as a kid.
The only situation where I would perhaps consider him a must-have is a good segue into Paul Cassatt's question here, and that's thoughts on trading Cox to a forward line when you have Grimley potentially already as a ruck forward on your ruck. ruck bench. So that's where I'd be tempted. If you already have a ruck forward, would then Mason Cox be more tempting? So if you have a Grimley, all of a sudden you can have either Grimley or Cox subbing in your forward line each week, or perhaps even if you have a non-playing player, all of a sudden you can flip your non-playing player to your forward line when you need to use a loophole, for example, or otherwise you can have Cox flipping into your forward line as traditional cover, or Cox even into your rucks to then serve as actual ruck cover. So in the case of having a ruck forward already in place, would that be a lot more tempting? Dunny, thoughts on that? Do you have a ruck forward already in place?
I don't have a ruck forward, mate. And if I did, that would be the only reason that I would probably bring Cox into my forward line. But I agree with everything Mark said. Look, I don't think I would bring him in just to sit on my ruck bench. But if you had that, like a Grimley or someone, as you say, sitting on that ruck bench as a ruck forward, then yeah, I'd probably seriously look at bringing him in.
Mark, would that tempt you anymore if you had a Grimley or even a non-playing ruck forward?
Yeah, look, I think that that would very much change the situation for me, and it would make me much more inclined to bring him in. I think given his performance in the first 2 weeks, he should get at least the next four games, you would think, if he stays fit. So that's probably enough to make some money and be of use to your team.
Yeah. Buckley has talked about playing Cox with Cloak when Cloak does eventually return to field. So that is good signs for his job security, at least.
I think rumours have it that Buckley loves playing with Cox.
Love it. Yeah, I think must have is probably drawing a bit too far a line, but I could definitely see heavily considering him if I already had a ruck forward link. And even though in the preseason I didn't pick a ruck forward link due to the fact that the ruck forward premiums didn't look like they'd be worthwhile considering throughout the season, what I failed to consider was Cox and Grimley potentially making even a non-playing ruck forward look more attractive. So I think there's a learning experience, and in the future, even if I were to take a non-playing player as such, I would still consider a ruck forward just for that additional flexibility for sure. I think that was a bit of a mistake in hindsight. Hopefully it shouldn't cost. We'll move to a few more rookies that are on the bubble now. So we've got Dougal Howard, who is a ruck at Port Adelaide, but he's actually listed in the forward line for Supercoach purposes. We've got Sam Grimley, of course, another ruck forward. We just mentioned him, but potentially doesn't look as good as Cox. And the last one, Darcy Tucker, Mark. You had mentioned you'd consider going early on previously. He scored only 34 on the weekend. So I'd be interested to hear your updated thoughts on him.
Sure, I guess that Darcy, he is a rookie, like a rookie-aged rookie, is probably means that he struggles with a competitive advantage against some of the other rookies that are available. I think Ross has a very strong incentive to play him a bit, and if he's named this week, I wouldn't rule him out. Very interested to hear Dunny's thoughts on Dougal Howard, though. Mm-hmm. Howard taking on the number one ruck role, you'd think, for the next 3 months. That seems like someone with pretty good job security, even if his scoring isn't... If you can just spike one good game, then he could get into enough value. I'm definitely interested in Dougal Howard, depending on what Dunny says.
You're right. His job security with Lobie now out, that knee issue. I haven't seen the time frame, but if it's 12 weeks, then, yeah, Dougal Howard's job security looks really good. So off the top of my head, I can't think of who would be next in line that's playing in the sample, but he's certainly done enough to keep Kenny happy, I think. He provides a bit of a contest up there. He'll obviously get the backup support from Charlie Dixon and from Westhoff and Trengove if he comes back into the side this week. So you know, he will spend a fair bit of time on ground, but I don't think he'll be the guy who's going to rest up forward. Probably going to rest on the bench, yeah. I would suggest. But yeah, certainly job security is great, so I think he'd be a reasonable pick.
Howard versus Cox.
Howard's obviously got the job security, but I think Cox has got the better scoring potential just for this fact that without Cloak in the side at the moment, and last I read or heard, Cloak was probably going to be out for at least another couple of weeks. Based on that, you know, Cox is going to be in there for at least 3 to 4 more weeks, whereas obviously you got Howard for 12, but I think Cox is more likely to give you a better average over that period of time.
I'm surprised you're saying that, Dunny, because I'm a little bit sceptical about Cox, but maybe you don't have too much confidence about Howard's scoring potential then.
Yeah, and I think that's more it. I think, you know, Howard he hasn't been terrible, but he certainly, I think he's just that smaller body. He's been in the system for a little while now, but, you know, he scored a 61 against Adelaide and then only a 46 against Richmond in a game where he was up against Hampson and a pretty much out-of-form Marich. So I'm just worried about how well he can actually continue to score. Happy to be wrong, guys, but that's just the way I sort of read him at the moment.
He has got Nick Nat, Stephen Martin, and Max Gorn in 4 weeks.
That sounds painful. I'll take your word for it, Donnie. You would know better than we would on these port rookies. So we'll move on to the next question here from Clint on Facebook. Do we double down this week potentially to grab the rookies now or down and up this week, understanding that next week Petrarca and Keys are both coming up and they were both strong preseason targets? As an alternative to that, potentially you could grab Petrarca or Keys 1 week early and double down this week as well, with a view to doing one down, one up next week and not having to double down next week. What are your thoughts on that, Mark? Would you be grabbing a Smith and a Cox, understanding that Petrarca Keys are coming up?
So you want to know whether I want to double down on Cox? Probably not. I think that there's a few different strategies you could do here. You could actually double down this week and double down next week, because it's not just Keys next week. You've got Kieran Lovell from the Hawks should play his second. I actually like the look of him in the Giants game. I know the Hawks got beaten, but Hodgie's out for a while, and he's a bit of a ball magnet, so I don't think he's a terrible pick either. So I'm tempted to just go one down and one up this week and probably take two of the rookies next week is where I'm at the moment. But I know some people are going to go more rookies in the next 2 weeks, and I don't think that that is actually as terrible a strategy as people have thought maybe in the past, because you just got to get the money on field sort of thing. Just because I really think that you should be targeting the best rookies. These rookies are still going to be making money for you. Some of these rookies you're going to be relying on late in the season and through the actually playing on your field. I think it's really important to take the best rookies when they're available. So if you think that there's four really good ones, I'm not totally against taking all four of them.
Dunny, your thoughts on downgrading over the next couple?
I think Mark just talked me into it, actually. Look, I was probably going to double down this week, but as I said, with Petrarca and Keys, I'm actually tempted now to go one up, one down this week and then double down next week with a bit of a war chest to head forward. By doing the double down, you'll actually obviously let another week worth of growth in some of your other rookies come through.
From my point of view, I think I would only really double down if I had a ruck forward and I really wanted Mason Cox. Then I would downgrade to Smith Cox this week. And because Petrarca Keys are coming up next week, I'd look at that. I think that's the only situation where I'd consider double downing this week, double downing that week. I think in every other situation, I'd want to squeeze an upgrade somewhere. I understand that rookies are the priority, and I'm a bit hypocritical because I have carried bank for a bit this season, but four downgrades can net you, like, I mean, if you're picking up 150 to 200k, that, like, you could be having like a sick, like 700. That's just too much money to be holding, in my opinion. If I didn't have a ruck forward type and Cox looked less attractive, I would be tempted to take Smith and Petrarca this week and then reassess next week whether you wanted Keys, and potentially if there was another undeniable rookie, then potentially I'd be in a situation where I'm double down 2 weeks in a row. But otherwise, I think the more sensible course of action is to take Smith this week together with an upgrade, and next week look to bring in Petrarca Keys, or just take Smith, one of Petrarca Keys this week, and next week take the remaining player plus make an upgrade then. So I would almost certainly be looking at an upgrade in the next couple. So slightly differing opinion from you guys there. We'll move away from the rookies now. Do you guys reckon that's sufficiently covered?
Yeah, you've had enough Cox for today.
Non-stop, I swear. Like, you must have spent the whole day writing these down.
I've been holding my tongue. You're talking about squeezing cocks in and how attractive cocks are. I've been trying not to.
All right, let's move to some potential outs now. These are questions that we've had from some frustrated coaches out there on social media. Hopefully we can put some of those worries to ease. First question is from Ben on Facebook. Is KK still worth holding considering his lackluster performance? So we mentioned him as our favorite back line upgrade a few weeks ago, and since then I think he's gone like 77, 77, 70. Not quite super. Mark, do you think he can turn this around? He's averaging 82, which isn't awful, but isn't premium type numbers.
Yeah. No, and if you did bring him in when we suggested that, you'd be pretty disappointed with that. But I guess with these backs, they do have slow periods and then they get better. So I think that the concern is maybe Gold Coast have lost the last three and haven't been as competitive as you would have liked. But yeah, I still expect him to come good. If I had him, I definitely wouldn't be trading him out. Even the 70s, they're not terrible, and you can still rescue a pretty good average if that's your basement.
And I'd agree with that, because we were both in agreement when we gave out that advice. But it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts, Dunny, on KK. I know you've been a fan in the past.
I have, yeah. I've had KK in the past, and I'm a little worried about him at the moment. As you say, with those scores, he's got four scores in the 70s, just the one ton in there, and that was against Carlton. If I had him, I'd be holding him. But if I didn't have him, I wouldn't be looking to bring him in at the moment. Over the next few weeks, he's got Melbourne this week, not too bad. But after that, they face the Giants away, Adelaide, West Coast away, Sydney, and then Richmond away, and then Hawthorn in Tasmania. So not a really good run coming up for the Gold Coast.
Just to mention, Marcus, if you had have taken Hooley in the same week, Hooley's gone, I think, 50, 50, 100. So he's actually scored less than that time. So just to make Kake not look so terrible.
And a few players have gone down injured in that time, so at least KK's still standing. Could be better, though. Could be better. Next question is from Tomcat on Twitter. Is it the right time to upgrade Libba this week? So had a bit of a corky on the weekend, and to be honest, I thought he did well coming back on and playing. But he only scored 70, which is his lowest score for the season. And after starting off with a 115 and 118 and looking like maybe even a potential keeper if he returned to his contested best or clearance best that we've seen, he's since not scored a ton in the month following that. So thoughts on Libba? Is it the right time to upgrade?
I'm tempted just to hold him for a while, mate. I mean, like you said, I was actually really impressed by his performance on the weekend. The commentators at halftime said, oh, we won't be seeing this half, and then he did come back on and he was really good in patches and got his score up to a respectable amount. I still think he's the best player in the competition at the bottom of a pack. It's just some of the ham got out were awesome on the weekend, and I think that he still has the potential to have a few good games. Whether he's a keeper or not is probably up in the air, but I don't really see him losing too much in price, and I do see him being very much a last upgrade rather than a priority.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. All right, the next question is from Dale Cito on Facebook. Advice on what to do with Steph Martin, please. The guy's killing me and losing cash quick. So since Stephen May bumped into him and wiped him out in round four, he's since scored only 69 and 81. He's dropped 40K over the weekend, dropped a total of 120,000 since his starting price. He is priced under 500,000, which would have been surprising to most, especially the owners who would have selected him preseason. Dunny, your thoughts on Martin? Surely you still hold a premium ruckman?
I've got a bit of advice here for Dale. He's not losing you cash. He's going down in value, but you would never, ever bring him into your side to trade him out. So you're not losing cash with him. The only issue you've really got with him is his scoring. And I agree 100%, Marcus. You bought Steph in for the season, you keep him for the season. Unless he gets a long-term injury, he won't be leaving my side anytime soon.
100% agree with that. Some sensible reasoning. Hopefully this is just the effects of some sort of concussion, which we've seen Smith perhaps succumb to that last year, and he'll turn things around quickly, hopefully. We'll move on to the ins now, potential trade-in targets. And as I mentioned in the rundown earlier on, we're going to look primarily to the backline this show because people considering trading out a D-Wiedering duo, for example, would definitely be looking at a one-up, one-down because a lot of us have plenty of backline rookies playing, and you wouldn't want to be bringing on a Mitch Brown or a Tippo by downgrading in your backline. So the ins that I've got on the run sheet to talk about are Boyd, Simpson, Doherty, Hooley, KK, who we've already touched on, so we can skip through him, and Jared McVeigh. So let's start off with Boyd for the first one, because we did get a couple of questions about him. 121 and 125 are his last two scores, and should be noted that that's happened after Robert Murphy went down in round three, and then Johannesson has to go down after that in round four. So since Johannesson and Murphy has been out of the team, he's averaging 120 plus. Is he going to pick up the slack in terms of scoring there?
Look, I think he will. And the only reason I didn't have Boyd, you know, on my immediate radar earlier was he's obviously in line to get rested at some point. But now with the issues that the Dogs have and the back line, I think he's going to have a lot less opportunity to get that rest. So I think he's a good selection, but there will be a point at some stage where he's likely to get that rest.
Mark, are you tempted at all by Boyd?
Yeah, as soon as Wiedering went down, he was probably the first person that I thought of. I think he'll be a very popular trade-in target this week just because his ceiling is so high. He's one of the very few defenders that could average 105. Necessarily the rest, Dunny. It's actually like genuine injuries that Boyd in the last few seasons hasn't been rested. He's been copping calf injuries, old man injuries, things that will keep him out for 2 or 3 weeks. So that really worries me with him. And I think that you pick him in hoping that what you say is right, that he's not going to get a chance to miss any games, try and take his scoring potential, which definitely looks there with those other Bulldog players out. But that is a risk. So he's definitely in consideration for me.
I'm actually going to take a different tack. I'm not actually considering Boyd, and I don't think I will. I've been poor in terms of trading in injury-prone players in the past during upgrade season, and that's come to bite me a little bit toward the end of the season. So I'm going to try and stick to strategy of picking injury-prone players at the start and not trading them in and hopefully not getting on an injury merry-go-round. So I'm going to take a slightly different tack there. How about the other guys that we mentioned? So Simpson and Doherty from Carlton, does that tickle either of your boys' interest? I mean, Simpson is averaging 100 at the moment, even though Carlton aren't doing superb, and we know he's averaged 105 in the back line in the past.
I don't mind him being solid in the past, but I'd probably look elsewhere. He's seen plenty of the ball in the Carlton back line, but I'm just a bit worried about him.
How about Doherty? Last year, you know, it showed that potential step out in form, but failed to keep it up for the entire season. Whether or not he'll be able to be consistent across 22 games this year is still yet to be answered. But where would you sit in terms of his consistency, Mark? Do you see improvement in that area?
So it may seem like I'm underrating Doherty because I don't talk about him a lot, but I do see his scoring potential. It's just he doesn't personally interest me. I guess I don't like barracking for Carlton players, maybe. And so I'm sure he's a good pick. I just like other alternatives.
Yeah. I know McVay's tickling your interest a little bit, Mark. Thoughts on him?
Still got to be a break-even of 100, over 120, but started the season at about 560,000 and is a bit cheaper now and seems like a really good chance to be one of the top defenders. And I think that he's probably a really good Boyd alternative. Just seems a safe player that's likely to score around 100. And he has a pretty good short-term Bombers this week. And I think someone easy the week after as well.
Yeah, I think if I was going to take a punt on somebody with a little bit more age to him, I think McVay would probably be the guy that I'd move toward. How about Hooley? He's priced at 482,000, scores of 59 in rounds 4 and 5, rebounded with a 107 last week. So his break-even's 117. He's essentially bottomed out already. Dunny, thoughts on Hooley?
I'm a Hooley owner. I think he's definitely underperformed in those 2 weeks against West Coast and Melbourne. Obviously, the Tigers are struggling a bit at the minute, although he had a really good game against Port where he was playing some of the role that Rance would normally play. At the moment, break-even of 117. If you wanted to pick him up, I'd probably wait a week at least because he will drop in price. I don't see him getting 117 against the Hawks. Then they do play Sydney, so potentially wait a couple of weeks if you want him. But I think he'll be a good selection throughout the rest of the season.
All right, so if I could get both you blokes to give me a top option and a second favourite option from the blokes we talked about.
Yeah, I think that I've heard a few people considering Daniel Rich, and at 450,000, he would be right up there. My number one and two picks would be McVay and Boyd, probably in that order.
Tony?
Probably go Boyd first option, and then probably McVay / Hooley are probably pretty equal for me.
I'd have Hooley 1 and then Simpson 2, actually. So a little bit different from you guys. McVay and Boyd, I'm just a bit nervous about because of injury and age concerns. But I could definitely be proven wrong in those stakes. And they're definitely quality players that could prove me wrong. Nicholas James actually asked about Rich, Mark, who you did bring up. So it's a good segue. After he really struggled and got tagged out of the round 2 game against North Melbourne against Ben Jacobs, a lot of people were looking to our advice in the preseason and looking at it with quite some disdain, but he's since turned things around. 114, 78, 103, and all of a sudden his midfield minutes and his performance, they're all looking on the up and people are considering trading him in. I'm still not sure about recommending people trading him in because I've been scared a little bit off that 38, but your thoughts, Mark, as a fellow Rich owner?
I think the 38 was his lowest possession game ever, and it wasn't just the Jacobs tag, it was the fact that he got injured during the game, which really restricted him. I think Hanley and Zorko are in awesome form at the moment. Rocky's coming back, they've got Beams coming back soon. I don't think he's going to be quite such an obvious midfield tag as he was, but then again, he's probably competing for some midfield minutes. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy to have him in my team at the moment. I think that if you're looking for a cheaper value pick for some reason, he's probably a pretty good one.
Even though I'm tentative, I'm getting more and more confident about recommending others get on the Rich train. Dunny, do you have Daniel Rich?
No, I don't have Daniel Rich, but he's certainly been doing really well, and I think he'd be a good selection if you did want to save a bit of cash like Nicholas is talking about there.
All right, so next question is from Robert Bobby Gain, another Brisbane player, Rockliffe. So we traded the bloke out after two rounds and arguably came back early, as Rocky seems to do, and disregard injury time frames, which is a bit frustrating. But 83 and 117 later, priced at under 500K, all of a sudden got coaches smacking their lips again. Is he a rock-solid trade or a Rocky selection, as Roberts has put it?
I'll be certainly attempting to get him into my side this week. I think he's a good selection, and at that break-even of 84, I can't see him getting a great deal cheaper. Port have been leaking a fair few points this year from memory, and I expect him, unfortunately, to score well against us this week.
I think he was on 70 at the start of the last quarter last week, because he looked like he was on his way to another poor score, but then pulled out a decent one in the end. I would like to see one more good score from him. I know his break-even isn't huge, but given his injury concerns and lack of preseason, that I think that there's enough reason to be a few concerns about him, and you'd want to see at least another good game, and even a bit of a trap like he was last year.
I'd be open to selecting Rockliffe again, but I'd be happy to pay, you know, even up to 40K. He's 66K cheaper than what we initially paid for him. Like, I'd be happy to pay 420, 430K for him, but, you know, with a couple more solid games under his belt. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. If he scores 140 this week, maybe you'd be tempted. He does have Port and then Collingwood and then Melbourne, which, I mean, they all have the potential to play good footy, but they're also all not sitting in the top eight at the moment. So he does have a decent chance to prove himself. We'll move on to the next question here, and the last question from the week from Shane. So this is a forward line question for those people considering a forward target: Dusty Martin v Barlow, and then I'm going to throw a third one in here v Toby Green, because I noticed a few people on the forums talking about him as well. So Martin, Barlow, Green, how would you rate them? 1, 2, 3.
I would probably go pretty much in that order, actually. I'm a Dusty owner, had him since day one. I've also had Barlow since round one, and I kept him through that rough patch that he had. I think Dusty, whilst he hasn't been at his brilliant best, he did play pretty well against Port, and I think he's looking to turn it around. Barlow will certainly, I think, do well with Fife out of the team. He's going to pick up more of that midfield time that he was lacking in those early rounds when he was scoring poorly. And Toby Green is just a roller coaster that I'm not prepared to get on.
Mark?
Barlow, Martin, then Green for me. I think I'm very excited for you to have Green, Marcus, and I'm a big Green fan, and I'd love to have him, but he does have a four-week period coming up in a couple of weeks where he has Bulldogs, Adelaide, Geelong, and Sydney. So it's a real test for Toby, and I think ultimately you'd love to have all of them in your team, and I've got two of them, and I think I'll just stick with that.
Pretty much agree with both you blokes. I think I'd lean more toward Barlow over Martin at the moment, because since Fife has gone out, Barlow's scored 128, 134. And then Martin, just because of his history of scoring, I'm still wary of Martin. Like, he's missed the ton 4 out of 6 times so far this year. I'd still like to think he's going to turn it around, even though I don't have him. But I was considering potentially bringing him in this week, and I think I might hold off one more week and see how he goes this week. But overall, I agree with you guys. Green does look the shakiest of the three. I think I'd just be more tentative on Martin until he turns things around, but I'd expect him to eventually. All right, that wraps up this week's podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, Dunny. As always, bloody fantastic to have you on and to be able to talk Supercoach with you.
Thanks, guys. Love coming on. And yeah, hopefully some of the advice you guys have given out tonight might actually help my team.
Mark, anything to leave our listeners with for round 7?
Not really, mate. Just keep an eye out for those rookies. I think that there might be a few more coming through than maybe we'd thought. So that'll be what I'm watching, and hopefully I can actually beat you next week. I'm getting sick of this losing crap.
Try 1 month in a row, mate.
I'm not used to it.
I know. The last year and a half have been very strong for our XVYs in your favour. I'm hoping to keep things up. Geelong has West Coast this week, so I'm a little bit nervous about that. Hopefully your teams both have decent games. I know, Dunny, you have the Brisbane Lions.
We have Sydney, mate.
You have Sydney.
Sydney, then North, remember? We're lucky to get within 100 points next 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I saw the game on the weekend, Mark, the Essendon game, and that was Wasn't the most exciting game of football to watch.
But Cale Hooker is signed. Bring it on.
Yeah. At least there's positives coming out of the camp. So thank you all so much to our community for tuning on again this week. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach for those of you considering sponsoring the show. And again, massive, massive thanks to Dunny. We'll have you on hopefully sooner rather than later. Always good to have you on, mate. So catch you all next week. See ya.
See you, everyone.
See ya. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy.